Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 30th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I'm very tired of Chris Cosenza.
Yeah, you know, for somebody who hates cruising as much as you do, can't believe you go on cruises that aren't affiliated with Ante Up.
Oh, man. I can't either, and it won't happen again. Don't you worry.
Well, you'll get your sea legs here for another week, and then you'll be back on board with us.
So. Oh, yay. That's right. I should have just stayed there. I should have just rented a hotel room while I was there for a week and stayed there instead of making that trip again.
Because about the only thing you like more than cruising is staying in hotels.
Come on, don't give away all my secrets.
Well, of course, stuff happened while you're gone, Chris.
Of course,
so
that always happens.
Let me fill you in. The biggest thing is that the World Series of Poker, in an effort to spur more entries, announced this week that it's ditching last year's $10 million guarantee for the champion. And instead, we'll guarantee that the top 1,000 placers will win at least $15,000. And they said, based on last year's numbers of entries, that would drop the top prize to $8 million. How is anybody going to live on that, Chris?
I know. I'm not going to play then. Forget it.
But it will still mean that every November 9er would get at least $1 million. See? All right.
If I can't get a cool eight figures for my buy-in, it's just not worth it. I mean, are they nervous? Are they nervous that they need to spur more entries? Really?
You know, I don't know how much of this is PR and how much of this is just, you know, not PR. I mean, if you were one of the conspiracy theorists out there that think that they're spinning this, the spin is that they put on it is last year was some milestone, I forget what it was, and that's why they wanted to do $10 million for the winner. Now, that milestone is obviously gone this year. So now they are they don't need to do that anymore, so they're trying to do something different.
All right.
Now, if they're not spinning, I think it actually does seem like they are, as they, I think they always do, listen pretty well to players. And, you know, let's say a couple of schmucks like us, right? You know, putting $10,000 down for a tournament is just beyond our wildest dreams, right? So to walk away with nothing makes that decision more difficult, right?
Yeah.
So if we know that 1,000 people are going to get at least 15,000, you know, that's like a sixth of the field last year, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, it does maybe push a couple people over the edge on that, you know. So so I would say I'm on the side of this is good business for them. You know, flatter payouts are becoming more the norm now because players are not playing in many tournaments because, you know, the ROI is not there. So
yeah.
You can make it flatter and still make it a pretty good haul for the people that do very well. Then, yeah. You know, hey, $8 million for finishing ninth is, $1 million for finishing ninth is still pretty darn good.
Yeah, if you make the final table, you should deserve $1 million. And, you know, if you finish in 1,000th place, you deserve your money back at least. So, $15,000 is not too bad either.
Yeah, I think the real hurt comes in those, like, I think it's like the final 300 players get to 15,000, something like that. I could be wrong, but where some of those players would probably get more under the old payout structure. So
right.
That's kind of the real rub there. I don't think anybody's going to complain about $10 million versus $8 million on top. And if you are, then get a life.
Yeah, really, you're crazy.
But, you know, if you finish, you know, 500th or something, and you're getting less now than you did before because they're paying so many more spots, then, yeah, I can see that.
Just seems like people who are, like, the people who would complain about that are the ones that aren't really going for $10,000. You know what I mean? They're going for the million, and it just seems kind of like, I don't know, semantics to me that if you were going to, last year I would have made 21,000 instead of 15. Well, you spent 15, you spent 10,000 to hopefully win six more this year than last year. You know, you're going for the big payout anyway, so
it's, well, here's the other thing. Move. Yeah, here's the other thing about that is how many poker players do you know beat their chest every time they play the tournament? Ah, I wasn't at the cash. I wasn't at the win.
Yeah, exactly.
Hear me roar. Like, all right, great. Nice job, Tarzan.
All right, Katy Perry.
But then reality, they want money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the rub, is that there are some people, I will disagree, that there are some people that honestly believe when they enter tournament that all they want to do is win. And that's great. You know, Godspeed to you. But I think the reality is a lot of the people that bark about that secretly are excited when they cash.
Yeah.
So this is really, you know, for anybody complaining about it, I'm going to guess there's a good chunk of those people complaining about it that really don't mean to be complaining about it. Just trying to make a stink over nothing.
And one last thing, too, is this is based on last year's numbers.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, if you get the numbers they're anticipating, they probably still will get the $10 million on top.
Oh, yeah, very good point. Yeah, right. I mean, because again, they did say it's to spur entries, and it does seem like it could, right?
Yeah.
So this helps them get an extra, I don't know, 2,000 seems pretty wild for yeah. just this change.
Yeah,
but
it sounds a little steep, but still.
Maybe other changes, then yeah, you're right. You're still $10 million on top, and, you know, lots of money elsewhere, so.
Yeah. So all you guys who are worried about your $6,000, don't worry. You're probably going to get it anyway. So what's this GPI? I mean, these guys, they do so much stuff.
Yeah, you know, Alex Rectus is just, I can't imagine he even sleeps anymore. But so this week, actually it might have been last week, I think, he announced the Global Poker Masters had announced the initial rosters for the first Poker World Cup, which will play out March 21st to 22nd in Malta. I, of course, was invited to play for the United States, but that's my birthday, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right, you can't make it.
I had to politely decline. again, everything that Alex seems to do and GPI seems to do is all formula-based, right? So the eight countries invited to participate were the eight most highly represented nations in GPI's index, and that was the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Russia, France, Italy, and the Ukraine. Actually, a good kind of quiz would have been before they announced that for people to
guess
pick out the eight, right?
Yeah.
I probably would have got all but the Ukraine.
I would have gotten three, maybe. Us, UK, maybe Canada. After that, I don't know. Maybe Russia.
Yeah, definitely Russia.
Yeah.
The last three are probably a little more difficult. But anyhow, each of these teams consists of the four highest-ranked players from each country, plus a wild card to be announced later. And the 40-player tournament will be live-streamed in five languages. I think that's actually the coolest thing of all of this, right?
Wow.
And Kara Scott will be the host.
So the five languages are American English... English, Pig Latin, Canadian.
No, actually, I didn't read, but I'm going to guess what, let's see, English, does Canadian count as a language?
French.
A lot of A's?
No. Yeah, no, French probably.
But no, yeah, English, French, German, Russian.
Spanish.
Oh, and Italian, right? Oh, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, Spanish, I think Spanish.
Could. That's weird, there's no Spanish-speaking countries represented.
I know.
So maybe not.
I know. But you would think that there's more Spanish people that would be listening than Italians, though. I you know what I mean? There's only one country of Italians, but there's tons of countries that speak Spanish.
Right, huh. True. Yeah.
Good. Well, now we got to have a quiz next.
Well, see, but this is the rub on poker live streams that I've been having this debate with people forever, right?
Yeah.
How many people watch the live stream unless they have a rooting interest in the live stream?
Yeah.
Participants, right?
That's true.
So, you know, if you got Joe's Poker Room live streaming the final table of the tournament tonight, yeah, there's going to be some hardcore poker players to tune in and watch that, right?
Right.
Just because they don't need to watch poker. But for the most part, the viewers are going to be somebody that knows one of those nine players at the table, right?
Could be Spanish
so this
people
case would be,
have a stake in the Italian team or something, though. You never know. Or France.
Probably, I guess, maybe. Well, the other thing, too, I guess, is that these players, obviously, being ranked highly in GPI's index, obviously are doing very good stuff on the world tournament circuit, right?
Right.
So, even though they are from Italy, they might have most of their success in Spain, right?
Correct.
Something like that. So, but that would be the crossover, that makes sense.
We have to have another quiz next week, then. Name the five languages. So I like this next note. This is pretty interesting. I think if we can get that to go here, I think that would eat out all the time.
Americans are too fat for this concept.
That's right.
So here's a Poker Stars and Jones and Sons restaurant teamed up to open the first pay-by-poker restaurant. This happened at a poker tour in East London last week. Patrons had the option to pay £50 for the meal or play three hands of poker to determine the price of their meal, which would be free if they kept or exceeded their 10,000 unit starting stack, and then slightly less depending on how many other chips they had left.
Right? How many hands do I have to ante or blind?
You know, I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? If it's like one, then, you know, I mean, how much more can the menu be or the price of the meal be if I'm under 10,000? But, you know, if I have to blind every hand and I'm do seven.
Well, it is a heads up, so you would have to blind every hand.
Oh, it's heads up? I missed
that. It was heads up, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. If it's heads up, then, yeah, I'll do it.
Right, so you're forced to actually play.
Yeah.
But as everybody said, there's no incentive not to play, right?
Yeah, unless they say the meal's 150 pounds. Then
it's not like if you lose all your chips, you got to pay 100 and you're committed, right? So you're paying 50, so the worst you're going to pay is 50, you know. And the best you could do is eat free.
Well, wait, no, it says it determines the price of their meal. Could their meal go up?
No, no.
So then why wouldn't you play it?
Well, that's what we're saying.
I thought that it was I thought there was like an...
This is marketing 101 here. This was, let's play for your meal. And then when you get there, you realize you have to play for your meal because there's no reason not to. And that's what they want.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure Jones and Sons would love somebody to sit down and pay £50 for a meal. But I didn't have a meal in Great Britain that I thought was worth £50. So sure, there are some. Don't get me wrong. But actually, no, that's not true. I did have one. Our good friend Rob Paul Chapman took me to this hidden place that you didn't know about. And that was actually worth £50, so yeah. I take that back.
Yeah, but we can't go there, so.
Well, not now, but, you know.
Everybody's going to be knocking on his door.
But the concept's expected to be offered at all stops in the United Kingdom and Ireland poker tour this year, so if you missed it in East London last week, don't worry, you got a chance to play for your poker.
I would like to do that. I would like to be able to play for my meal every time I go out.
Well, hey, this would be a great concept for the World Series of Poker because nothing gives me the burns my toes more than having to go to that little food court thing there when we're out there and pay $27 for a box of noodles, right?
You were going to say red ass, weren't you? And then you didn't want to say it, and I said, no, I'm going there.
I don't mind saying the red ass. I've just I've realized I've said that more often now. And I need to work to burn the toes back. Get out of homage to our hero.
Jeez.
But yeah, that would be the great thing for the World Series too, because, you know, I haven't heard of anybody that hasn't bitched about, you know, $4 for a soda or,
yeah,
you know, $12 for a bento box there. So, you know, have a chance to play for it.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
You know what's really cool is when our good friends come through and have an Antioch Poker Tour event at their casino.
Yes, this is a very exciting item.
We are very excited to announce the Golden Nugget Las Vegas will host an Antioch Poker Tour event May 27th to July 3rd. With the winner of the main event appearing on the August cover of Antiup and winning a seat to the Antiup World Championship. The schedule will be released soon, but look for two big guarantee events to sandwich the World Series Colossus event. So those folks who are looking to come down or come to town for that should join us for one or both ends of it for two more low buy-in, big prize pool events. More information on this and all other Antiup Poker Tour events can be found at antiuppokertour.com. Our good friend Sam Minatello is running things there and doing big things.
Yeah, this is going to be very exciting to see the schedule. I think he told me he should have it done here within the next couple weeks. And, of course, once we have it done, we'll have it posted on our website and mention it on the show. But right now, you know, he's very keen on this Colossus event, right?
Because right.
It's the big buzz. Everybody's going to be out there for the World Series paying this $575 buy-in.
Right.
And obviously, he doesn't want to go up against it. That's suicide, right? And not good for players anyhow. But he wants to build his first event around it so players can have a couple opportunities to play both. You know, the Colossus, I think you only play one flight per day, I think, if I remember correctly. So, you know, he's timing it so, you know, you go play the Colossus, you get busted out, you know, you can't re-enter that day, so come down the Nugget and play another big guarantee event for about the same price point. And the next day you can take another shot at the Colossus and take another shot at the Gold Nugget.
So, cool, very cool.
And that's just the first event. Obviously, this thing is going on in, you know, more than a month, right?
Yep.
all through June and into July, and then the main event obviously will have a pretty big guarantee as well too. And of course, being an Annie Up event and a Sam Mantella run event, plenty of mixed games will be on the schedule.
So, yes,
you know, and the buy-ins are going to be pretty low. I believe the range he told me was 120 to 560. So no event more than 560 buy-in, and 120. I mean, gosh, who can't afford that these days?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And Sam is always big on structures. You know, he ran our very first Annie Up World Championship down the Dominican Republic and put the structures together, and gives you a lot of play for your money. So this is going to be a very exciting event. We're looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Also looking forward to the fact that three casinos have now announced new Annie Up Poker Cruise giveaways. Harrah's Southern California will award a package for our Los Angeles cruise in 2016. To a drawing winner on February 21st, and they just ordered two more cruises from me this week too, and they'll have details for that announced soon. So if you live in Southern California, Harrah's Southern California is the place to go to win your way on board that cruise. And to qualify for that, you can earn tickets from Live Play all month in February.
Cool.
Pearl River Resort in Mississippi, where I'll be next week, is going to begin an Annie Up Poker League on February 21st. Players can elect to pay an additional $10 league fee each Saturday at noon through May 21st, and that money goes into the prize pool for an end-of-the-league free roll, so, you know, that money comes right back to the players. You have to pay the $10 to be eligible for league points, and the player who has the most points at the end of the league will win a package for our November 7th sailing out of Tampa, as well as some gift cards for airfare, so you won't have to come out of pocket very well, much at all for that cruise. And then finally, Bucky's Casino in Arizona is having tournaments the first four Saturdays in March, awarding cruise seats for the November 7th sailing out of Tampa as well, too. Get all the details on all these giveaways and all of Annie Up sailings at antiupcruises.com.
Whew. Man, do you want to take a break, get a drink?
Yeah, I love that all these rooms are doing giveaways for us, but it's hard to get this information out.
You know what I was very curious about was while I was gone all week, I knew the Restock the Shells numbers had been coming in. I've been getting dribs and drabs because I didn't have the internet while I was gone, so I got a lot of photos and stuff. But did we ever get the final numbers on how that worked out?
Absolutely. Finally got the last numbers 2 days ago. And I'm very happy to announce that because of the generosity of all the players, volunteers, and poker venues across North America who participated in this great initiative that we did with Blue Shark Optics, an estimated 43,660 people got a meal who otherwise might not have gotten one. So
that's awesome.
Definitely want to thank everybody for that. That's just, that's amazing. 43,000 people eating.
Blows me away. That's so huge.
And we know this was a small event this year. I mean, you know,
just started it.
Diminish it, but yeah. We know we could do bigger and better next year. And so, you know, let's set the bar high next year. Let's go for 100,000 meals. How's that?
Yeah, sounds like a doable thing. I mean, we just started, just announced it. Now they see the success of it and the treatment we're giving it and how it all came through and came to fruition. I think that that's definitely a reasonable goal next year. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This comes from Paul Rolston. Says he was in a live multi-table tournament. He said he ships against his lone opponent in the hand, putting him to the question for all his chips and most of mine. The villain tanks and starts to talk out loud, and he is still tanking, I consider talking. I've never really worked out the best move when it comes to table talk. Some people I know can do the whole Jamie Gold thing and get a call when they want it or get a full when they need one, but I have never really known how to push those buttons. So, to talk or not to talk? I'll have a quick anecdote. One time I was playing, we were in the, one of those, what was that academy we went out there for?
Oh yeah, WSOP Academy.
WSOP Academy.
Years ago. Wow, when we were just kids.
That was so long ago.
It was.
And Annette Oberstad, who was still not even old enough to play poker legally in the United States,
right, yeah,
was one of the instructors and was at my table during the tournament. And I had like an underpair. And it was pre-flop, and I went all in because it was, like, getting short, and I didn't really think I was going to win this thing. But I was hoping to knock her out, you know. So it got to her, and she's taking a while. She's got her trademark sunglasses on, and I'm waiting. And then she looks at me, and she's like, you want me to call? And I thought to myself, okay, she's 15. She's a great player online, but am I really going to give anything away if I talk here? And I thought to myself, I'm not really comfortable saying something because I really don't know what to say. And then I thought to myself, you know what? That sounds like a good line. So I said to her, you know what? I never know what to say when people ask me that. And she called. Now, I don't know what you want to read from that, but she had King Jack. I had, like, pocket fours, and I crippled her. She didn't match up. And I didn't knock her out, though. I would have got a $100 pair of sunglasses if I had enough chips. Apparently, I was, like, 100 chips shy of knocking her out. But I really wasn't comfortable at the moment. Even though she was only 15, she's a great player, but you know she wasn't good at picking up tells and everything. She didn't play live. So I really wasn't too concerned about what I was giving away, but I still was nervous. So I guess my suggestion is, if you're not comfortable with it yet, don't do it. And then when you are comfortable, like say you have it, and no matter what you do, you can't lose. You know, you may lose more chips out of the person because they don't call for what you said. But at least then you might be able to experiment because you know you're ahead. They don't have to know that you only talk when you're ahead, you know, or when you have the nuts or something like that. But in this situation, if you're not sure, like you admit yourself that you don't know what the best move is yet, then maybe either work it out at smaller stakes or you work it out when you know you can't lose. And then at that point, you can kind of work on your patter, you know. But to me, I'm never really one comfortable to talk unless, you know, I have to. You know, I mean, unless I have to or whatever. But unless you're positive that you can get this person to do what you want, I just be quiet.
Yeah, I think that was my advice to Paul is, you know, if you're not comfortable doing it, why even attempt? Because right. you're just going to fail, right? Right? If you don't know what to say, which he admits he doesn't, then, you know, you just put yourself at risk, right? So just keep your mouth shut. Now, if you want to be a talker, then, yeah, do what you suggested and practice, you know, a small stage or a home game or something like that and see what happens and become better at it. But, you know, of all the things that I think you got to work on in poker, I don't think table talk is one of them that I would be very high on the list.
No.
I think you could be a much more – you could be an incredibly successful player just being stone-cold silent at the table, right?
Yeah, the other thing, too, is personality. I think a lot of the guys who are successful at it, it's because that's their personality. They were always talking. So they're never uncomfortable talking. And so they have been their whole lives talking to people and seeing the reactions to the way they talk to them. So they just translate it to the table. I mean, how many poker players that you can think of on television that are great talkers are all of a sudden shy away from the camera? Right, there's just none of them, you know, or away from the table. None of them. Negreanu, right? Helmuth, Gold. And all those guys talk. And they all talk for a reason because they're used to talking in real life, too. So if you're not, then just don't. Excellent. All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director and now Antiup Poker Tour host Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. This comes from Chris Spirito. He says, I was in a Casino No Limit Hold'em tournament, and after three players had limped, I checked my big blind with four of clubs, seven of clubs. Imagine my surprise when the flop also had a four of clubs.
Whoops.
I told the dealer there was a problem.
I think that's a jackpot, isn't it?
Yeah. I know, unless you want to land yourself up on an Antiup cover with two of the same cards. So he says, hey, man, he flips over his four of clubs, showing the dealer. Tournament director comes over and rules that the four of clubs in his hand should be replaced with a new card. Without knowing if it was an extra card or a supplemental one with another card missing, how could the hand continue? If I had played the hand without noticing the suits and made a top hand, what then? Is there ever a situation where the hand would be ruled dead and redealt? After the hand, cards were counted and it was an extra card in the deck.
All right, Sam says this ruling was incorrect. This indeed is a fouled deck. Play must immediately stop, and any chips that were entered in the pot will be refunded or returned to the rightful players. The deck also needs to be checked for any additional duplicate cards. You completely did the right thing by notifying the dealer immediately. I hope you will do the same if this ever happens again in the future. If you play the hand without notifying the dealer and get caught trying to win a pot with a knowledge of the fouled deck, you could forfeit any chips you entered in the pot. The right thing to do is to notify the dealer.
Yeah, pretty cut and dried there, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, you can't. I mean, imagine there's some people out there that would think it'd be funny to get to the end and hey, look, I got two fours of clubs. but that's actually a terrible thing to do. But yeah, the deck is messed up. I mean, when I read this, I mean, I don't even have to be a floor to go, what? Huh? How can you keep the chip? You just give another card?
And let's not go through the deck and see if it's missing.
The deck is fouled, right?
Yeah. So
there's something else wrong with it. I mean, the best case scenario is what happened. There's just an extra card in it. But, you know, wow.
Yeah, I mean, how many times a dealer counts the cards and it's 52 and he's got 2-4 clubs? That means another one's missing. That means the entire hand's been played without the possibility of the missing card to show up. What if that was figuring in your calculations or whatever, and that card's can't even show up?
Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of the minimizing effect, at least with the information we have here, is he checked a big blind, right? So it's not like he,
yeah,
you know, voluntarily put additional money in the pot and then, you know, flopped the same card and then lost it, right? Or,
right.
I mean, his hand had to change, right?
Right.
So I guess, you know, I could see maybe a young floor deciding that, you know, hey, that's the best thing to do here. But, you know, once we had the flop there and there was no action really, right? Because he checked his big blind, so there was no raise beforehand.
Right.
You know, let's just, you know, hey, everybody take your money back and let's get this deck correct and we'll play again, you know. There's nothing wrong with do-overs in a lot of cases, I think.
Yeah, that was the best case scenario all the way around. There was no way for him to know. Would have been cool if he was dealt 2-4 clubs. That would have been cool. but that was probably the least harmful way of this outcome could have been.
And that's an interesting thing, too, for the last part of Sam said that, you know, if you played with the knowledge, you forfeit any chips. I mean, how many times do you misread your hand, right? Particularly in Omaha, but... You know, I look down at 2-4s and they're both black. I'm not going to look to make sure they're both clubs.
Right.
Right? I mean, obviously, I would like to think that I could tell the difference, but, you know, that could be a very easy mistake to make, honestly,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So,
two black fours.
I mean, really, that's what I do. When I look down at my hand, I'm like, oh, I got 2 black 4s. So,
yeah.
That's all I need to know, right?
Yeah, it's easy. Then you don't have to worry about keeping track of suits because you know what you got. Apparently, you know what you got. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, be, I mean, why would you think clubs. You'd have 2-4 clubs in your hand?
I mean. Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here you go. Here's part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a regular 2-5 no-limit hold'em home game. In this game, we are one of the semi-regulars and get along with everyone fairly well. Most of these players are solid, and each plays the game differently. Tonight, we've decided to employ a new strategy. Rather than buying in for a typical 100 big blinds, we've bought in for 40. But we have 2 100 big blind buy-ins waiting should things go awry. We sit with 200, just about even, 1 hour into the game, which has seen a lot of preflop limping and checkdowns. It's almost like everyone is waiting for someone else to make the first big move. We're 8-handed. The blinds post, under the gun calls, MP calls, and it's folded to us in the cutoff with the 3 of spades, 3 of hearts. Not a huge hand, but if we hit a flop and someone else gets a piece too, we might get rewarded. We limp. Button folds, as does the small blind, and the big blind checks. 4 of us going to the flop with about $20 in the pot, and we couldn't have missed any worse than we do here. The king of clubs, queen of clubs, jack of diamonds comes out. However, it gets checked around to us. Initially, we think about taking a stab at the pot, but ultimately decide against it. Maybe we can hit a set on the turn for free. Would anyone see that coming? With $20 in the pot still, the turn is the 3 of diamonds. A perfect card. The big blind and under the gun again check, but this time the MP makes a pot-sized bet. This guy is a solid player, has a good handle on the game, but he can be tricky. He likes to slow play big hands, but he also likes to bet his draws. He also plays the players quite well and knows when to bet with air. He started the hand with 475, well covering us. This feels like a situation where he doesn't think anyone is strong and he's trying to take the pot away. We decide to make a raise here. If he is just trying to steal, he'll probably fold. If he's on a draw, we want to make him pay. We make it $50 to go. The big blind and under the gun both fold, and our opponent thinks for a while before overshoving his entire stack in. Why so much? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. And this comes from Tim Harris, and it's an online hand.
No way.
Usually it's one of our European listeners just rubbing it in, right? So kicking us in the gut and then pouring salt in the wound. But I don't believe that's the case here, because he says, really enjoy your show. This happened to me recently when I was playing online on a U.S.-facing site that will remain nameless with a little smiley emoticon. So he's American, and he's enjoying the Wild Wild West, right? It's a fairly loose game, so I play tight only. I play tight, only playing suited Broadway pocket pairs, on occasion non-suited Broadway cards. All right, so very
ABC
tight. Yep, exactly. All right, so it's a 10-cent, 25-cent, 6 max, and he's sitting in the cutoff with the ace of hearts, ace of diamonds, and the under the gun player raised to 75 cents, and it's on us.
Well, it's hard to say precisely what I would do, since I don't really know the size of the stacks and that kind of thing. But given it's 6 max, I'm not going to necessarily give under the gun credit for a huge hand. And I don't necessarily want to lose this person, but I want to make it enough that it's, you know, going to be heads up. So, I don't know. Let's see, $2, $2.25, something like that, I'll raise it to. Just because, I you know, there's some money in there already. There's already the 35 from the blinds. There's already the 75 from the raise. So you already got about $1.10 in there, so I don't mind making it $2 and, you know, and seeing if we'll get the under-the-gun guy. And maybe the guy's got, like, queens or something, and he'll re-raise us, and that'll
be... It is online, so the chances of him having queens or king are... Yeah. Infinitely better, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, him flopping a set to beat us is obviously going to happen, too. But I don't have any problem with re-raising a little more than, you know, like, maybe around 3 times. Like, $2, $2.25, something like that.
All right. I think I agree with you. That's exactly what I would do. And, you know, it's interesting when I talk to people about 6 max, that the different strategies. Because some... You know, they're worried that since it's 6 max that they're not going to get any action by raising. So they want to, you know, because they get, you know, 3 or 4 fewer players than they do at a normal ring game, right?
Right.
So they tend to tighten up a little bit, where I think it's the opposite. I like to play bigger with 6 max. And the fact that I've got aces, because most 6 max players, I think, are a little loose, because you do have to loosen up your starting hands in order to cut off. I don't want to say it's disguised, obviously, because we're raising, but your opponents in your range are going to put you on a much wider range than big pocket pair for re-raising under the gun here. I think he'd be doing it with lots of hands.
Now, he did say beforehand that he was playing pretty tight ABC, only pairs and only suited Broadway, essentially. So they may give him credit for the biggest hand that he
I would agree with you, except this is 10-cent, 25-cent online
true.
Poker.
But he's giving that information for a reason, isn't he? He's not telling us something that's useless.
Well, he knows that, but yeah. It's possible that somebody else notices that, but my experience online for lots of stakes, but particularly at dime 50 and a quarter, is people are folding laundry, watching TV, you know, no one's paying attention to the betting tells, which is unfortunate, because that's the tell that you get by playing online, you know.
Right.
You can't do the whole, as Paul asked earlier in his show, the whole Jamie Gould talk, you know. I guess you could table chat, I guess, but for the most part, it's your betting tell. So it would be amazing to me if players were paying attention to it, but it's possible. Yeah.
Well, do you then translate that into saying it would be amazing that people would understand what you're betting anyway? I mean, you went through the whole thing about saying you like to bet a little more because it's a shorter table, but does that even matter anyway now, because they're not really paying attention anyway and they're just going to play the way they play? Or?
Well, no, that's more of my strategy. I'm not really worried about people are thinking. I'm just thinking, you know, it's six-handed. You got to adjust to the six max. So you got to play a wider range of hands. You got to be willing to raise with a wider range of hands. And position's pretty awesome here. So we're in the cutoff. So we got, you know, one player behind us before we have the position. So if we re-raise here, we're probably going to have the quote-unquote button for the rest of the hand, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, my biggest thing is that, you know, if you have, I guess, a dime, 25 cents, maybe they're not even paying attention to normal poker, right? But,
right.
But that they, I mean, in a full ring, you know, if you raise an under the gun here, then you get more credence for having a bigger hand, where in 6-max, I don't think you can. You do, so.
Okay. So,
I guess my point is there's no reason to slow play these aces, Sam.
Yeah.
All right. Our hero raises to a buck and a quarter. Which is, I guess, the min raise, really, at that point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Raise. I don't think that's big enough, but at least he raised, so.
Yeah, kudos to the raise, just probably not enough to really get the effect that you want.
All right, the button calls, as is the small blind and the under the gun, so we're four-handed.
Yeah, see, we're playing 6-max, and you got four people in a hand.
That's a problem.
Your raise isn't big enough.
And we don't have position because the button came along.
Right, so now we're kind of screwed
big
over.
Enough with the button, right?
Yeah.
Oh, but interestingly enough, though, the under gun did not re-raise us, so.
Yeah, that makes it terrible.
Yeah, exactly. I would much preferred had he done that, right?
Yeah.
All right, the flop is the 8 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds, tray of diamonds. And remember, we had the ace diamonds in our hand, so obviously the top over pair and a diamond draw. And the small blind bets $2.62.
Wow.
You know, kudos to the half pot button, right?
Yeah.
And geez. The under the gun folds.
Oh, geez.
And now it's back to us.
All right, so the person who showed the aggression early is gone. Mm-hmm. And we got other people who just called, betting out. So I love our hand right now. We have an overpair and the nut flush draw. You know, if this guy thinks his hand is good, maybe he's got a baby flush, but we still have the nut flush. He may have top pair or two pair or something. If he has a set, we still have outs to a set and outs to a flush, so... I don't know if I'm going to call, though, because I have another player in this hand, and... You know, then you're given, like... Well, I don't know. 262
odds for us to hit. I want to give odds. To
yeah, yeah. I don't mind a call. I guess I could go either way on calling or raising here. To be honest with you,
oof, I don't think I'd want to raise here. I mean, this this screams to me baby flush here. So we obviously have an out to it, but I don't want to go to war right now with that out. You could have other things. I'm not putting completely on that, but it screams to me baby flush. Small blind betting in when there's a raise and a re-raise pre-flop.
Yeah.
And now three dimes come. It could also be a very smart player that figures that players like me would think, hey, he's only betting here with the made flush. I got to get out, which is obviously what the under gun did, right? Pulled like a cheap napkin.
Yeah. And you know what else, too, is to me, if I had a baby flush, I'd probably bet more because I don't want the higher cards that are out there to be able to catch up to me. So only betting half the pot, because half the pot's a standard bet when you're not even protecting, you know, or maybe even more. When you're betting little like that, you might actually have a bigger flush. So,
well, it doesn't matter how big the flush is.
No, I know, but I mean, I'm just thinking that, you know, I guess our flush is still good, obviously, because it's the ace if we hit it, but I feel like it could be a bigger hand than we're giving it credit for. So our aces aren't going to be good no matter what, if that's the case. You know what I mean? It's going to have to be the flush now.
This is also a hand where we could benefit from chip stacks, right? You know, if
yeah.
Line only has $3.12, then
yeah,
we're getting it all in here. Maybe he's got $78. We've got $75. That's what I want to avoid. I don't want to get into an all-in here with a hand that I really like.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of potential here. I mean, if he's bluffing, we got him crushed right now. And if he has a flush or a set, like you said, we got outs as well, too. So... I don't want to get out of this hand at this point, and I don't want to commit my entire stack unless my entire stack is minimal.
Yeah, no, I guess.
And if we call, then you're encouraging the button to call too, which is what I want because that gives me more odds to hit my flush.
Yeah,
better chance of me being paid off.
Yeah, I guess I'd probably call.
I guess the flip side is that if that fourth diamond comes, then it's almost an action killer, right? So we wouldn't get any more out of this hand
unless he has a high card. Like I said, unless he's got. The king,
right?
In his king hand or something,
right? Exactly. Right. So that would be the argument for raising here is that it's kind of like Omaha where you're raising on the come, you need to get the money in now because once the card hits, the action dries up.
Right.
But I would be so I'd have to balance that based on what I know about the small blind, which is probably nothing online. But I think it's a bigger concern for me to have this guy shove on me with a big stack.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like I said, I can go. I think either way, there's warrants. So, but in this case, probably a call is good.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does, and the button calls as well too. And with $13.11 in the pot, the turn is the Jack of Hearts. So our board is 8 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds, tray of diamonds, Jack of Hearts. So our heart didn't get there, and really nothing else did. And the small blind bets $9.05 now, a little bit more than half the pot.
Wow. That's like
actually considerably more.
Yeah, it's 3/4 or so. Jeez, this stinks. Because now I only have one card to come, and that's a decent amount.
And I would say now we have chip stacks here. We have a little less than $21.
Oh man! So half our stack on one card to come, and we know our aces aren't good now, right? There's just no way somebody's betting on the come and doing this to us. So our aces can't be good. One pair can't be good.
Right.
This guy's not doing it with an 8-9 or something. So it feels like it's, like you said, a made flush or a set protecting. So I don't know. I might let it go here, to be honest with you. I know it's enough.
I mean, we're no longer getting odds for the flush, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the small blind finally made a good bet. It's hard to say whether it's a good bet. I mean, if he's trying to get us folded, it's a good bet because he's not giving us the right odds. So.
Yeah, plus if, let's say, the Jack of Diamonds comes, now you might not have the nuts anyway, so you have one less out now with that Jack of Hearts coming.
Yep.
I might let it go. I feel like I would. I might let it go there. If I had a huge stack, I'd probably call. You know, if I had like 50 or 60 in my stack, I might consider it just because, you know, the other guy might come along. Or the other thing, too, is I don't know what the other guy's stack is either, so he might be all in for that 9, so I might call and know.
Yeah, I would, you know, say, looking ahead, he's got about 21 as well, too.
Oh, okay.
Do not know what the small blind has yet.
So. Yeah, I'm probably going to fold now. It's just, there's just not enough in there to hope you hit, and then you'll get that $9 back, but you're not going to get any more out of this guy, probably. Unless he has, specifically, the King of Diamonds, you know. Which is possible, but it was raised pre-flop, so you'd have to have something pretty decent, like Ace.
King, yeah, I mean, if he's betting on the come on the flop, it's really hard to bet this much on the turn.
Yeah,
because we and the button gave him no information on what we had. We just said that we were willing to call a half-pot size bet. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, if he's on the come, doesn't mean, you know, one of us could have the flush already. And if we bet out here, if we're a small blind, we bet out here, then we're probably going to get raised at this point, right? This is usually the raising street.
Yeah.
So... I would think, you know, if you were semi-bluffing or bluffing on that, then you shut down now and hope that you get a free card.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's betting and betting a lot now. I mean, this again, you go back to the, now he's betting enough now. He's like, you just take what I just mentioned. You know, now he's like, all right, these guys obviously have something that they're willing to call half pie bet. You know, if they do have a higher diamond than me, I want to make sure that I'm pricing them out here.
Yeah, the only hand that pays you off if you get there is the King of Diamonds.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe the Queen of Diamonds, but maybe. That's just a maybe. So, I don't even know if the Jack of Diamonds will pay you off, but yeah, it seems like there's not a lot of good reasons to call now or whatever.
I think there's zero reasons.
Yeah, I think we need to let it go.
All right, our hero decides to call. And the button shoves for $20.78.
Oh, jeez.
Small blind calls and back to us.
Oh, jeez.
The call would be, obviously, all of our chips.
We are in third place. Well.
Easily, right?
Well, he already... Oh, jeez. So now it's 11 more to win a ton. So now
and
I'm probably
calling.
And the
interesting thing is now, yeah, exactly. I mean, now we don't have to worry about not getting paid off, right? Because all the money's in the pot, right?
Yeah.
So... and we know if our ace of diamonds hits, we're good, right? There's no other possible thing that could beat us at that point.
Right.
Yeah, so this is a weird thing where we made, I think, a bad call to start with, but now it'd be a bad fold.
Yeah, I mean, a seven of diamonds gives somebody a straight flush, I guess.
That's true.
Or something like that, but really, you can't depend on that. You have to worry about just making your hand. Oh, man. Jeez, yeah, now you got a call after all that. Now you put your whole stack in with just a pair of aces and hoping to hit the flush on one card to come. Yeah, I guess I have to call now. I went from folding to calling because he called that $9.
Right, exactly. Which, jeez, you know, this goes back, this is, you know, the poker 101 stuff is, you know, you don't start with a bad hand. Obviously, we start with a great hand here, but, you know, because it's not that the first mistake is the costly one, it's the later mistakes that you're into.
Yeah.
And back called us $9, we're forced into having to make what's a correct decision now, but shouldn't have been even a decision for
two
us.
Two wrongs making a right.
And this is the interesting thing, I think, about these micro stakes, too. And we talk about this all the time with the hand. It's only a quarter, right? Because it's only a quarter for us, right?
But yeah,
if we're playing properly at the stacks, I mean, now it's, you know, if we call here to $75 in a pot for a quarter, big blind game.
Yeah. That's a big pot.
Almost 300 big blinds?
Yeah, it's basically three buy-ins. When you buy into that game, you generally buy in for $25, yeah. So...
a huge pot.
Yeah, that's a big pot. Now you can't go away because there's so much money in there, and you only have to call a little bit to get it all. Get almost 7-1 on your money to make the nut flush, and your aces, you never know. You never know in this game. Your aces could be good for all we know.
Well, that's true, too. Very limited.
Or an ace could be good at the end. It's another out for you. So you never know. Three aces could be good, so you got two more outs.
Yeah, these are one of those runs where I call, and I pray to the poker gods, please let me hit that diamond. I will never make this mistake.
And, of course, you don't hit it, so you continue to make the mistake the rest
right,
of the
exactly.
way.
Right, exactly. All right, well, our hero does make the correct decision to show up as well, too, or call, I guess. And the river is the nine of hearts.
Oh.
Wah, wah, wah.
Ugh.
The button shows jack of spades, jack of diamonds.
Oh, three jacks.
For top set with the diamond redraw.
Yeah.
And a small blind shows king of diamonds, ten of diamonds.
Oh, so it was a high flush. Yeah, that was a high flush.
Second bust flush on the flop. Very
nice. Wow, what a pot. And that's the thing, too, that jack of spades, jack of diamonds, he's thinking, all right, I got an over card. I got an over pair, I mean, with a diamond redraw in case I'm good, which I don't think you could think you're good there when the other two guys are getting it in there.
Yeah, he totally made a mistake shoving there, I think, because of this, again, you know, it seemed to me that the small blind really had this flush at this point. So at that point, if you got top set and you got the diamond redraw, I don't think you want to, I mean, I guess there's a case to be saying you shove there, but, you know.
He's got the full house redraw.
I mean, I guess if you decide, if the guy has a baby flush, but at that point, you know, because you do have a lot of outs now. You got, you know, the case jack, you got any of the full house cards.
The diamond.
And if you think it's a baby flush, they don't need the diamonds, so. Yeah. But
why not call?
Yeah. Yeah, because at that point, you're probably going to get paid off anyhow, right?
Because
I don't know. I guess.
You know what else, too, is if you say, if you call because you don't want somebody with a higher card to come along, they're not. If they already acted ahead of you for your shove, they're not folding now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not going to fold for $11 if they have a higher card than you, which was the case here. Our guy didn't fold.
Exactly.
So, why shove? Why not just call and hope to get that extra nine out of somebody and then the river, but wow, Jack.
Aside from the very loose pre-flop play, I really like the small blind how he played this. He had no business being in this hand with a raise and a re-raise in front of him, even a six-handed king-ten.
Yeah.
That's a total trap. But after that, he flops the flush and smartly, you know, donk bets into it, and then he gets the information, right? And then he knows, all right, so somebody's sticking around here with the ace of diamonds. I don't want to get there, so I'm going to bet more than I should, and got two people to make a mistake, or at least one person to make a mistake.
You agree with the jacks calling preflop instead of re-raising?
I do, because there's a raise under the gun and then a re-raise from the cutoff at that point. So at that point, I'm almost turning my jacks into a set mine.
Just because it's 6-max, I wondered if you're thinking they're playing looser and they don't really have jacks beat.
Yeah.
But
if it wasn't an under the gun and then a cutoff. The cutoff, I'm not so worried about it. I'd be worried about the under the gun re-raising back to him.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then I can make a decision at that point where I want to go. But if I raise it again and then the under gun has aces or I, you know, obviously, it would have been great for him to get it all in here because obviously the under gun didn't like his hand. And we would have definitely pre-flop got on with our aces, right?
Yeah.
Instead of jacks would have won it, so.
Yeah, if jacks pop it somewhere in there, then they get, you know, pre-flop. I mean, then they get heads up with the aces and turn the winner and win a bunch of money instead of losing their whole stack. All right. Well, that was interesting. I didn't think when he had aces, and I thought that was it, it was going to be a pretty cut-and-dried hand, but Went from a automatic fold to an automatic haul in one instant. That was pretty crazy.
Crazy.
All right, I'm glad to be on terra firma. That's how you say it, right?
I don't know. You always say that, and I never know.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.